Previously.tv Podcast Network.
You saw him?
Yeah. Sunday night, about 10:45. I was driving to the Sioux Plantation on San Vicente. They have amazing frozen yogurt.
Yeah!
Yeah, they do!
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 103 for the week of February 1st, 2016. I am White Bronco David T. Cole, and I'm here with Dancing Ito Sarah D. Bunting.
Sustained.
Fame monger in training Joe Reed.
Kardashian.
Observant Aikida Tara Ariano.
Harper here.
And scrutinized hairstyle Linda Holmes.
Could I be any curlier?
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Extra Hot Great. We are so happy to welcome, as part of apparently a work trade agreement between our podcasts, Pop Culture Happy Hour's Doyen and our great, good, esteemed colleague, Linda Holmes. Linda, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, Sarah. This is very exciting for me.
Welcome, Linda.
Yay!
Yay, Linda.
Oh, yeah. I was waiting for that yay. If that yay didn't happen, I was going to walk.
So this represents our Television of Pity bullpen reunion. This is,
Yes, it does.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Yes, it does.
Remember that?
Yes. When we were first at Bravo, the five of us, except it was usually the four of us, because Dave was did a lot of working from home, air quotes, during that period. But the rest of us all shared an office at Bravo, and we had a TV, and we watched a lot of Price is Right, and it was good times.
Sure did.
We were all yellow.
Yeah.
Yes, we were. Resplendent in yellow.
But we're not here to talk about Bravo.
No, we're here to talk about O.J. Simpson, specifically The People versus O.J. Simpson, American Crime Story, the much-anticipated new anthology from Ryan Murphy, which I personally was quite concerned about, that it would be, you know, Murphy-ing in all of the bad ways and sort of like, I don't even know what I was expecting, except that I thought maybe after all the casting news had been leaked that that was going to be the whole story of this miniseries and that it wouldn't really be that fun to watch once it finally began. I feel like I was wrong, and I'm thrilled to be wrong, and there's one performance in particular that I would like to note, which I think Dave agrees with me on, but let's hear what everyone else thought. How much have you guys seen? What do you think so far? Joe, how you feeling?
I'm three episodes in, and I'm loving every minute of it. It's really... I think you're right, though, with the expectation with Ryan Murphy, much as I've loved a lot of American Horror Story and other things that he's done, Scream Queens this season. But there's was a little bit of an expectation that it was going to be something of like a drive-by, sort of like gawking at the sort of freaks on display, as he tends to do sometimes.
Right.
And there's a little bit of that, but it's more for like flavoring and coloring, sort of the scene with Connie Britton and Selma Blair as Faye Resnick and Chris Jenner, which we've seen in previews, is less the constant tone and more of just sort of like an interlude. But it's such a good interlude. It's like the hat on Connie Britton in that scene is a supporting actress of its own,
and it's moving more than she's moving her face.
Yeah,
which I just thought was such a good directing note.
But it also feels like it has something to say about the way that the O.J. Simpson trial sort of spoke to culture as it was then and culture as it was to become, which I think, I mean, part of the fact that the Kardashians have such an oversized presence in this is a little bit annoying and just sort of like really sort of like nudging you in the ribs, being like, look at them all. They're all little.
This is something Linda has noted. I forget if you said this in the last Pop Culture Happy Hour, Linda, or if it was only on Twitter, but that was something I agreed with you on, where it's like, why every time they do a cut back to them, it's like, this takes me out of it.
But
you do wonder then, and I will wonder this in my new show fact sheet, who do they think the demographic is? Is it people who do remember the case firsthand, or is it people who are more Ryan Murphy fans? So,
I mean, I feel like they're trying to do both in that way, and they're sort of succeeding. I'm really intrigued by the fact that they're setting Robert Kardashian in particular up as kind of the moral center of the show. Robert Kardashian and Marsha Clark in, like, these twin sort of, like, pillars of decency in this whole thing. And it feels like the show has something to say about that, whether it's going to, you know, stick that landing at the end of 10 episodes, who knows. But it's intriguing to me that it feels like via this angle of the Kardashians and celebrity, they are perhaps not fully realistically, I don't know if Robert Kardashian was exactly like this, but I kind of don't mind because it feels like there's something to be said here about the way that celebrity and media and crime and privilege and violence all sort of like car crashed in the middle of the 90s in this way.
And then there's the meta effect of having these extremely famous people playing these now extremely infamous people.
Sure.
I think David Schwimmer is doing a spectacular job at giving I'm about to barf realness
to
this Kardashian performance. I'm really loving the performances, but Linda, I know you mentioned that you felt like the first handful of episodes was a little listy, a little like filmed Wikipedia entry. Has your stance changed on that, or you're still a little impatient with it on that front?
I was definitely, like, before I started watching it, I had heard that it was supposed to be very good, which is always dangerous because then you're, like, kind of set up a little bit. But I did not really get into the first three. The first three I found to be, kind of ticking off boxes of things that I knew and things that I remembered and things that I knew were part of the story. And I really didn't feel like I was learning anything. But then once it got into the ones, once the focus shifts kind of toward the lawyers, I thought it got a lot more interesting. And I think, also, I think they had to kind of get that stuff out of their system where they were going to do all of this, like, hey, look, it's Kim Kardashian, which I just thought was cutesy and unnecessary and very distracting. And there in particular, there's a little part where like dad gives a talk about like, don't get all wrapped up in being famous. And I was like, oh, for God's sake, you gotta be kidding me with the on the nosiness of this.
And it's so cheap too, because like, they're clearly not part of this story. They were children. Like we can see them being children.
It's like of all the things that you could make this story about, I thought it was almost like shockingly boring to make it about like, isn't Kim Kardashian the worst? I was like, that's not interesting at all. That's not an interesting thing to say at all. So at the beginning, I was really actually kind of impatient with it. I think one of the problems, too, is that Cuba Gooding Jr., who's playing O.J. Simpson, I think this series is not necessarily taking a position on whether he did it or not. At least it doesn't seem like he is. It doesn't seem like they're taking a position on whether he did it or not. And if you're an actor, it's really difficult to get a handle on a character. It takes an enormous amount of skill to get a handle on a character when you haven't decided, or you're not being guided, or the series isn't interested in whether you're playing a person who just killed two people or not. Yeah. So I kind of was, the beginning parts, I was kind of a little bit disappointed based on what I had heard. But then once it got into the stuff, I think that Courtney B. Vance, who's Johnny Cochran, is really wonderful in it. Yeah. And I think once it turns into that story, once it turns into the story of like Cochran and Shapiro, that's a much more interesting story to me than like, Rod Tidwell and Theo Huxtable in the White Bronco, like that. That was a little, I don't know.
I am glad they managed to include the you know who this is, damn it line, which I mostly remember from Saturday Night Live. Tim Meadows doing that like sketch about this is AC, you know who this is, damn it. And it's just like, there's that level of recognition of just these, like, I'm amazed how many of these names I still remember, like Detective Van Adder. Like, why was that still in my head?
Yeah.
Or like, you know, I'm waiting with somewhat bated breath for medical examiner Dennis Fung to show up because it's like, I know that name. I remember. It's so weird.
Yeah, so I never really paid attention to the story as was happening, as much as you could not pay attention to something that big. So a lot of the sort of, oh yeah, of course, let's just get on with sort of the more inside stuff, It didn't really bother me that it was like a progression to that point. You know, like you were saying, like, Linda, you liked it when it picked up towards, when it started to look at the lawyers more deeply. Like, I didn't really like pay attention to the ins and outs of the crime scene and stuff like that. So it was okay. I mean, it was nothing special. It could have been just like a Law and Order episode, basically, that, you know, the first chunk of the first one. But man, when you were saying about the Kardashians and everything, you know what it seemed like to me? And here I am now going to compare Star Wars and O.J. Simpson. But it was like in The Phantom Menace, where it's like, nice. Oh, Greedo's helping with the podcast, the pod racing thing. Oh, it's Greedo. Like, who gives a shit? It's Greedo. He was on the screen for 6 seconds and Han Solo blew him away. We don't need to see Greedo. He's not part of this
Greedo's
story.
Greedo's origin story.
Yeah.
Well, right. The other thing I compare these things to sometimes is like the part in Back to the Future when the guy's on the phone and he's like, it's your cousin Marvin.
Yes.
Marvin Barry. Yeah. And it's like, sure. I get the thing you're doing.
Or
and there
Peggy
are times
Sue got married.
Like,
you bought an Edsel? Ha ha, we get it.
I mean, somewhere in the FX offices, there was an executive that says, how are we going to get the young kids into this? This is ancient history to them. I know, Kardashians. And then...
Oh, I think didn't even need to have to come from an FX executive. I think that's a Ryan Murphy thing through.
Yeah, theater. That's true. No, you're right. You were saying about Robert Kardashian. I was trying to figure out why his character seemed so familiar to me, even though I didn't watch it. And I figured it out. His relationship to OJ is this character from cartoons.
Hey, you want to dig up some bones for you? Anything you say, Spike? Because you and me is pals. That's right, isn't it, Spike? Hey, Spike, you want to play ball? Huh? You want to play ball? Huh, Spike? You want to? Huh? Huh? Huh, Spike? You want to? Huh?
I can't believe you didn't edit that clip so that every instance of Spike was juice.
Yeah.
Was it one of you guys or somebody else who said on Twitter that it was very distracting because Ross is exactly someone who would have had a friend he called the juice?
Yes.
Except his friend would have been the moist maker, but yes, otherwise, exactly.
Yeah.
Can we talk about John Travolta, please?
Please, because I love it so much.
I love it.
Yeah.
It is so fussy and, like, I don't know what direction he's getting, girl. But I love, like, the eyebrows are ridiculous and he's, like, completely, like, this yellowy orange. Like, they don't even have a word for this color in the Crayola box. It is amazing.
But so is Robert Shapiro's real skin. That's what it looks like.
Yeah.
He's an LA guy. That's what he's, that's how his skin looks. He goes to
I just
Palm
can't
Springs
imagine.
Every weekend.
It's, yeah. It's just so amazing how he's able to, like, John Travolta looks nothing like Robert Shapiro in real life.
Yeah.
And yet
like a
he's like,
taller,
he's just
heavy.
Contorting his face and it's just like, oh, I see it. It's so weird, but I totally see it.
And he's having so much fun.
Oh, yeah.
That's all. He's just having a fucking blast.
Despite the eyebrows, which look like my nieces have this dress-up kit that's like a whole set of different shapes of fake mustaches. There are also soul patches. This thing is excellent. But anyway, but after a few episodes, like somewhere in the middle of episode two, I kind of forgot that was John Travolta. Yeah. Like, he really, to me, disappeared into the role. And Dave is also a big fan of him as well in this part.
Do you guys know that meme, Confused Travolta, where they just take they isolate him just looking around confusedly from Pulp Fiction? Yeah. Like, his mannerisms as he's walking around as that character, they're totally Confused Travolta. Sort of like, it's almost like Michael Keaton in the Batman suit from the 90s where he couldn't really move his neck. He just sort of moves like a tank. And I don't know why, but it really works. And I really love it. And so far, I have to say, Travolta is my absolutely favorite thing about this show. And I think the difference between the long-term longevity of this show as it pertains to my watching versus American Horror Story is, how awesome is it that Ryan Murphy is bound by history and can't change this season halfway through and hit the reset button and suddenly it's about, you know, fish in an aquarium or something.
That's what made me hopeful about it, was that he actually has a story that he has to, like, stick to.
Because he is really good at making things interesting. Just like, you know, he's if he's in retail, he would be a window dresser, right? You know, like, that's his strength. I'm always interested at the start of American Horror Story. It's like, ooh, that's interesting. These characters are crazy. And then, like, three episodes in, I'm out. Yeah. Bye. Boring. And this, you know, although we know how it ends, At least I know there won't be aliens popping up in a story about an asylum or whatever it was. You know, like, I know what I'm getting, and I don't have to worry about the
probably
mid-season switch. He says, hopefully.
Yeah, that you guys had a much better experience with that Travolta performance than I did. but that's okay. I think to me it just feels so like it feels so much like I will go on television and that will get me my awards that I want that I haven't won recently. So it feels very movie star doing TV to me. It feels awards grubbing and kind of
I don't think it's a good performance necessarily, but it's an enjoyable one. Like, you know what I mean? Like I wouldn't
put him up
for an award, but I'm having fun watching him. And, you know,
he's going to win all the awards, though.
Travolta for Emmy. This has been Paul Quinn's friend with no middle ground.
Yeah.
No, I think it's great. I also think, and Linda, your comment that they are being kind of cagey about whether they think he did it is right on. And I'm not sure whether I think that's a good choice or whether I'm annoyed. I think right now it's both. And I'll have to see how I feel about it a few episodes further in. But I think Cuba Gooding's performance is really good given that. And I think he's also doing really well, like, whatever. I'm the one who watched all the, like, anniversary specials about the case and the verdict last year. And there is a certain, like, Cuba Gooding is a little too small physically to play OJ. He doesn't have quite that same just sizable charisma. But he absolutely nails that moment when, like, he's no longer being OJ TM. And the attention is not on him, and the light goes out in the house of his personality.
Yeah.
And it's just like, there's nothing there. Like, he's completely this, like, reflex machine designed to get and maintain positive attention for himself. And he also is really good at, like, physically inhabiting, like, when he's walking, like, mimicking that stiffness that OJ had, and, like, whatever, his knees were all fucked up, I guess. Probably still are in jail. but yeah, I'm quite impressed by his ability to make up for, like, the physical differences between himself and actual Simpson, with really getting that, what I think is the sociopath turning it on and off switch.
Yeah. Well, what I find interesting is, because you're right that the show doesn't take a position about whether OJ did it from the OJ side of things, but what it does is it gives Marsha Clark's character a real platform to deliver the case as she sees it, and as convincing and sort of like open and shut as she sees it. And the show definitely seems to be interested in telling her story so much more than the actual media was back at the time, where the media sort of fell in love with Johnny Cochran and really had the knives out for Marsha Clark in a lot of different and sort of insidious ways. And
right, agree.
As somebody who was sort of like raised by OJ truthers, like, I was around a lot of people who really thought that he was being, you know, framed and whatever. It's interesting to watch the show. Yeah. It wasn't even Buffalo, though. It was like just my, I don't want to defame anybody in my family. Certain people in my family are conspiracy adjacent. Okay. No, I think I was just going to say that, like, just seeing the case laid out in a way that is sympathetic to Marsha Clark, I think fundamentally changes the way you view it, even without having to take a stance on whether OJ did it vis-a-vis his character. Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I don't particularly like what they're doing with her character either. I think it's a little much, like, with the battle axe, like, she's constantly smoking, like, we get it. She's hard to like, but she's right. Okay.
Oh, I like her.
I don't know. I mean, I like her as a person, and I'm on her side, like, of history.
Sure.
I just think the show is being even more unsubtle than it is elsewhere about that, but your mileage may vary. Like, I'm not mad at it. I just don't love it. Paulson's doing a good job, as always. So,
yeah, it's interesting because I think that I'm wondering whether my not clicking into this piece as much as a lot of other people have, like not just you guys, but a lot of other people, is that this entire, essentially the run of this entire situation from the case through the trial and everything, was all the time that I was in law school. So I think it might be that it was more like absorbing at that time. And so I got to the point where it was like, I have heard everything about this that I ever want to hear, even more than other people did. Yeah. So it was, I'm trying to think whether the fact that it had this weird, because like, for example, a local news crew came to the, student lounge and watched us watch the verdict.
Oh, wow.
When it came in. So it was a weird time to be in law school, I think. So sure. It's possible that I don't click into this for that reason anyway.
Hmm. Has anyone here read the book that it's based on, the Jeffrey Toobin book?
Not yet. It's on my desk. Not.
No.
I'm interested to read it now. I like his writing very much. So I'm curious. I mean, if the show isn't taking a position on whether he did it or not, I assume that's reflective of the book. If it's possible to write a book about the trial that doesn't take a position. However, watching the first three episodes, which is as many as we watched, made me remember the Michael Moore episode of Jeff Garland's podcast, which is called By the Way, where he lays out one of the, I guess, leading other conspiracy theories of the case, which is that OJ's son, Jason, did it. And I went back and...
Oh, yeah. That was definitely a thing at the time. I remember that was one of the alternate theories.
I didn't remember that from the time at all, but that was before, like, you know, the internet was a thing, really. Yeah. So I went, I've did a little Googling on that. And I recommend it. It's a pretty solid case for an alternate theory of what actually happened, which is all I'll say without...
Yeah, the other alternate theory was... Yeah, the other alternate theory, or one of them, was that Marcus Allen did it because Nicole had supposedly, in Faye Resnick's book, she said that Nicole and Marcus Allen had the thing. And that is being currently addressed on The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, Faye Resnick and Marcus Allen's ex-wife are both on it right now. And so, like, OJ culture is, like, really seeping in from all angles. It's really
because they're doing that ESPN one, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was so excited for that one.
Yeah.
Well, I'm way in. And so is Dave. I was surprised when we went to watch this on whatever night we watched it Thursday. I was like, "Do you want to watch another one?" And then we ended up like watching three in a row, back to back to back. And I was shocked because this is normally not Dave's thing at all.
Well, I would say to me, it's not like, you know, a great show with a capital G, but it is very
so watchable.
Yeah, watchable is the word for me on this one.
It's incredibly watchable, even when it's being ridiculous. Like the Travolta thing, I totally get people thinking that that's way too much.
But knowing who's
a high wire act, certainly.
But knowing who's making this show, like, I expect some of that. And certainly, like,
exactly.
You know, because, you know, it's American Blank story,
That
the stunt casting is like,
it's so
a quarter
of
the fun for me. You know, like, who's going to be this? Like, I didn't know anybody that was in this except for...
you mean the real
Gooding.
People? Oh, no, you didn't know any of the actors.
Yeah.
You didn't know the cast. Oh.
And so when each one pops up, David Schwimmer, what the fuck? Like, that was fun. Like, I enjoyed that. And
I really hope Cato gets his own whole episode.
Oh, my God.
Because I goddamn love Billy Magnuson.
He's great, right?
He's so
I was
funny.
Texting,
you hugged him?
I was texting Ramos screenshots of him as he showed up. I was like, look who's here, look who's on. It was so fun.
So good.
Also, are we all ready for Rob Morrow to show up as Barry Scheck?
Us who got to episode three are already way into him. So, he's great. His wig is a real work of un-art.
And I think I'll be interested to see how you guys feel when you watch the next three. Because like I said, I've seen six and I was not really in the first three, but I was quite in the second three. So it's I'll be interested to see how you guys react to that shift as well.
Can't wait.
Yeah,
very excited.
Me too. I'm excited.
And excited for Sarah D. Bunting's coverage of it on our site, previously.tv.
And right. I believe Tara Ariano Eyebrow Wig Cop will also be joining the
working
case.
Overtime.
Working overtime.
We'll see. Definitely going to happen.
This is Extra Hot Great Micros. Today's topic is best TV little sisters. going to go with Lisa Simpson because she's smart but will watch terrible TV with you. Joe.
I'm going with Sydney Andrews on Melrose Place. Not the best little sister to Jane, her sister, but she was the best little sister for all of us during the course of Melrose Place. She was a hooker, a homewrecker, a waitress, a cult member, a blackmailer, a patsy, an attempted murderer, a corporate raider, a matrimonial roadkill, a revenant, a cradle robber, a murder victim for real, and finally a ghost. Sarah?
I gotta go with Dawn Summers. Super shiny hair, glass shattering scream superpowers. Tara.
Oh, mine is Sybil Crawley. Definitely the best of all the Crawleys. An angel on earth. Really, apparently, too good for all of us. This world was never meant for one as beautiful as her. TV is all well and good, but when it comes right down to it, the best little sister has to be Gabrielle, who's celebrating 27 awesome years with Jacqueline as her big sister. So from your big sis and everyone here at Extra Hot Great,
happy birthday, Gabrielle!
Hey, Mom. We just finished watching Season 10, Episode 3 of Face Off.
That's right.
What was going on this week?
So they were letting in a guest judge for the Spotlight Challenge, and the guest judge was David Peterson, a voice recorder.
A voice recorder?
A voice maker.
He's a professional language maker.
Language maker. Oh, I get it, because there was weird ooga shiga booyah da da.
Right. And so there are a lot of shows where they bring in characters that are from somewhere else that speak a language that's not currently real. And
ooga shaka biga naga.
So the challenge was to go into a room and they were picking artifacts and they would listen to the language that this David guy had created that he thought would go with the artifacts. And then they would have to create an ancient race of people or whatever that would speak that language.
Yep. And he gave a word on advice, like, when you're on stage, I want to see that this character clearly speaks this language. Oh, of course. This guy would obviously be going so fast because la la la.
Right. So they were in groups of two. Do you remember who your favorite was?
My favorite was Yvonne and Anna.
Yes, they did a really great job. Theirs looked kind of Egyptian, would you say?
Yeah, I would say that. So the concept is this guy came from another land and walked into a cave because he was cold and hungry and he had nowhere else to live. But then he saw a special hat and he put it on and he called himself this like a spirit, as in God. And then he would order people around.
Was he a good guy or a bad guy?
A bad spirit.
Mm-hmm. And there were a couple that were interesting. Another interesting one was Melissa and Katie. And you learned about scarification.
That's gross.
Do you want to tell everyone what scarification is?
No.
Fair enough. They probably know. And who else was in there? Who was your least favorite?
I hated Ant and Drogies.
Why?
It was just like a frog wearing a uniform holding some sort of gun.
Yes.
I hate it.
It was pretty strange. It was, V said that it looked like a Halloween mask, and I went, ooh, ouch, that's a bad,
compliment.
Well, it's not a compliment. That's bad feedback.
Hey, I'll give you some bad feedback. It looks like a Halloween mask.
Yeah, I think people who make, makeups like that, that would be the ultimate insult.
What do you mean, ultimate insult?
The worst thing they could hear about their art.
Looks like a Halloween mask.
Right. And who ended up being on top?
It was Yvonne and Anna and also Caleb and Melissa. Mel,
that's right. And who was on the bottom?
It was Jirogi and Ant and Robert and Johnny.
Jirogi and Ant made that weird frog alien Halloween mask thing. What did Robert and Johnny do? Robert's not having much luck.
No, he's been board game man bottom. Octoman bottom.
What was the Octoman?
They made an octopus head, and they painted it pink and purple with some grayish color, as if it was old and rusty. And then it was a face that was red with a black beak.
Mm-hmm. And Caleb and Mel were on top, Yvonne and Anna, and they had... Caleb and Mel had this snake head thing, and they kept talking about the bladder in the throat, and I was confused while they were talking about making that. Do you know what your bladder is?
How you breathe?
Well, that's what they used for the character, but in your body, do you know what your bladder does?
No.
It's a pouch that collects all your urine until it's time to pee.
Urine? Oh, urine.
So I was very confused why they kept talking about making a bladder, and then it was in their throat. And that's because I'm not familiar with makeup making.
Or body making. Because you're not a doctor or a body scientist.
Well, I still know what a bladder is. Anyway, so who ended up winning this week?
Yvonne. It's her first win, and that's finally good. Because bottom, bottom. She's from Canada. Like, come on. Bottom, bottom. Finally, we got our first win.
Woo. And who went home?
It was Ant, probably because of his cartoony frog Halloween mask alien. Ew.
Yeah, he did not do well. But if you're listening to this, Ant, keep trying.
Keep trying. Go.
Thanks for speaking with me this week, Liv.
You're welcome, and we'll see you next week for Face Off.
One, two, three, two.
EHG listener Joanna writes, my friend Ali Tadros is crowdfunding a new CD and a couple weeks left to reach her goal. She's at 70% and I'm guessing she'll reach the goal without my help, but I thought I'd give this a whirl. Not sure what to say other than I love her music and I think more people should hear it.
And the tea kettle's screeching, this kind of silence is new.
I sat down at my little desk and started free writing about all the New York noises I usually do my best to tune out. Garbage trucks barreling down Eastern Parkway, my roommate boiling water in the kitchen, the upstairs neighbors rustling around their apartment. What fell out of me was a song about adjusting to life in the city, all of its sounds, its stresses. What about it feels liberating, and what about it makes me batty? Living here isn't always easy, and trying to make it as a musician doesn't make it easier. New Yorkers are hard to impress, they've seen it all. But if you can learn to embrace it, you'll find inspiration everywhere. The small, sweet things are what make New York's rough edges bearable. The trick is in paying attention.
To the street sweepers hiss, cause this kind of silence is free. And there's a beep up the street like...
To listen to more from Ali Tadros, visit http://ally, that's A-L-Y, previously.tv/ally. If you like what you hear, support her on Pledge Music by pre-ordering her upcoming album. And our thanks to Joanna for supporting Extra Hot Great, as well as Ali.
All right, it is time to go around the dial. Everybody is bringing a little something from TV that they're interested in these days. And we're going to start with Tara Ariano.
Jane the Virgin is back. I really missed it. This episode was interesting because it introduces the first sort of major gay character on the show. And since the premise of the show is kind of revolves around Alba, the grandmother's, you know, very stern anti-sex position, which is why the titular Jane the Virgin is still a virgin.
You
in
said
part.
Sex position.
Maybe it was an accident. Maybe it wasn't. Anyway, the episode, what happens is Rogelio's mother comes to town and she tells everybody that her husband is gay and he's leaving her. His name is Manuel. And you sort of expect, or I did at least, that Alba would be very against this, but she gets a scene where she says that she's sad that he was in the closet for so long, but now he's living his authentic life, and then says she has a gay friend at church who explained all about it to her, and I thought that was really interesting. It sort of shows the evolution of that character, that there's maybe is more to her than I had given her credit for initially, because I've been very against her all this time. So I'm happy that Jane the Virgin is back and excited to see where it's going next in terms of plugs. Once again, I'm going to mention the Again With This podcast on Beverly Hills 90210 because we're getting into the episode where some real relationship stuff starts happening among Dylan and Kelly and Brenda, and there will certainly be some screamy reactions from me and Sarah, and maybe already have been. And I also want to plug something that I have nothing to do with but is really making me laugh a lot. I recently had to quit a couple of podcasts because the people that run them are too dumb, WTF, but one of the ones that I added, I seriously turned off the WTF on Patrick Stewart in the middle of it because Marc Maron asked him how many dialects there are in England. I was like, you're too fucking dumb to run this podcast
anymore.
This
is my favorite thing that you do, Tara, is quit things in the middle of listening to them or watching. This is my favorite Tara thing.
There are actually two podcasts that I quit in the middle of. That was one. Another one is one that I'd listened to from the very beginning. But anyway, not from anyone I know. I don't know why I'm not saying what it is. I'm just not. But anyway, the one that one of the podcasts I replaced it with is called Hollywood Handbook. It's on the Earwolf network. It's run by Hayes Davenport and Sean Clements. This is slightly a tie-in because Sean Clements is a writer on The Grindr. But the premise of it is that Hayes and Sean are like these super pompous, you know, Hollywood insiders who know everything, and they're like fake self-deprecating about everything. And the idea is that they're trying to give their listeners you know, the real inside dope on how to make it in Hollywood, except they get everything wrong. And every time they say someone's name or the title wrong of something, it makes me laugh so much. It's such a dumb, cheap joke. But in the first episode, they do this whole thing about the Don John trailer, and they keep referring to her as Scarlett Johnson. And then later they have Jake Johnson on, and they keep referring to how his show is on after the MIMBY project, like MIMBY. And it's so stupid, but it makes me laugh so, so much. The last episode I listened to was with Paul F. Tompkins, so of course it was genius, but it's like an improvised sort of comedy thing. Highly recommended, Hollywood Handbook, and Again With This on Beverly Hills 90210.
One of the funniest things on the internet still for me is that collection of pictures of food and then misspellings of the food underneath. So I totally get it. So like it's like a picture of ham and it says ham. There's a picture of an avocado and it says arvar kardarp underneath it. And every time I go back to it, like every 6 months, and it makes me laugh as much as the very first time.
It's so stupid. Yeah. Hollywood Handbook is like the Hollywood version of that post. Dave is totally right.
Yeah. Linda Holmes.
Yeah. So I have been on staycation for the last week as we tape this. And I'm going to tell you right now, it is the best thing ever. Not working and also not having any plans at all has been amazing. And one of the things that it has freed me up to do is watch a bunch of stuff that I enjoy watching, but normally feel like I should be watching things for work. So one of the things that I have been watching is Rehab Addict, which used to be on DIY, but I think now they run it on HGTV. I don't even know. I find it on demand. What do I know? Mm-hmm. I'm with the millennials, whatever. And Rehab Addict is about this woman named Nicole Curtis who goes around and gets and finds like old houses. Like a lot of times they're very nice, like old broken down mansions. Like you would expect them to maybe be haunted. And she finds them and then she restores houses over a period of like weeks. She'll do like 10 episodes on one house and like there'll be the one in the kitchen and the one in the backyard. And her whole thing is that she does not try to turn them into modern houses. She tries to turn them back into what they would have looked like originally. So she goes out and like goes to junkyards and tries to find like old doors and old fixtures and stuff like that. So that's one thing I like about it. But also it's an opportunity to watch this show where like this actually quite small woman like goes around and she refinishes the floors and digs stuff up and does tons of work herself. And it's weirdly fun to me to watch this lady who's kind of like looks a little like a pipsqueak in the sense of like she's short, and she talks about that herself. She's always like, I'm tiny, whatever. But she goes and like throws bricks around. It's kind of cool. I don't know. And she's been, I was watching one this week where she was doing a house in Detroit, and it was kind of cool because she's talking about the, you know, trying to fix up these houses and these various blocks. And as with any show like this, you always have to take it with a grain of salt in terms of its realism and truthfulness. But I kind of enjoy watching Nicole Curtis fix houses. In terms of a plug, I would just plug my show, which is Pop Culture Happy Hour, which I make with some of my pals from NPR. And we have similar to this roundtable kind of conversations about various things. as you hear this episode, we will have just taped one on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend nice. And a couple other things that will be coming out Friday. So that's our show. And you can find it at NPR, or you can just search for it on iTunes or wherever you get podcasts.
Awesome.
Joseph W. Reed.
Yes. Close, but no.
Upside down W.
Flip that W upside down. You got it.
Joe, have you noticed every time I do that, it's a different letter?
I consistently call him Joseph K. Reed.
maybe I'm sending you secret messages.
I've got so many things taped up in my bedroom walls. It's crazy. I've got figuring you out, Dave Cole.
Yeah. Red yarn, Joe? Red yarn?
The M stands for Matheson.
Yeah, red and yellow and green. It's different threads, so it's a whole thing, Dave. You'll never know how much I'm catching on to you. Don't worry.
Fucking glass here, people.
I didn't watch Hollywood Game Night this week until later in the week, so it took me a little bit. I wasn't able. Normally, I watch it live or close to live so that Tara and I can do our after show podcast. I wasn't on this week. I was ably filled in for by a friend of the show, Adam Grossworth, who was wonderful. So it took me a few days to realize that they had instituted this spelling based tiebreaker. And not to be all Johnny, I put on one spelling bee and now I know everything about like how you should do spelling competitions.
But
like this was super bullshit and unfair in that the tiebreaker was that they had the two contestants who were tied had to spell a name, but it was like they would alternate letters on and off.
Yeah.
And so they're spelling Shia LaBeouf and it was just like easy part, easy part, easy part. Oh, you get the hard part. And it's just was sort of patently unfair because it was the first person to fuck up loses. But you have to make them fair. And also, like, I was sort of hoping that they would make it to the end of LaBeouf because one of the more common ways to misspell Shia LaBeouf is to put two F's at the end of his name. Mm. So it's like, would Jane have just like stopped it after one F, or would she have gone to the next guy and been like, what should we do? Do you want to keep, you know what I mean? Like, there's just too many ways that's not fair. And they need
Heather and Jessica's Beowulf trick.
Well, I said that in my podcast with Adam, who then said, I've never had a problem spelling that. And they're like, okay. Just kidding. Love you, Adam.
Good for you.
Yeah. So
I'm a buffologist.
I wanted to get that out here on this podcast so that I didn't take up too much time in the next Hollywood Game Night podcast. But for my plug, listen to the Hollywood Game Night podcast. It is now under the Again With This umbrella.
Yes.
So come listen to us there. It's usually... Yeah, by Wednesday morning at least, you'll be able to get some nice, you know, next morning coverage of your favorite game show and no one's. Like, it's Tara and me and whoever else feels like flipping by the channel that night, but we love it.
Despite the fact that it now sounds like I don't, I always listen to it.
Yeah, we really caught you on that one, Linda.
It's terrible because I totally always do, but I missed this one and now I'm like repeating Tara from the show and now it's like, you have a podcast? Never heard of it.
Jacques.
That's fine. I don't expect anyone to listen to anything we ever do, although thank you everyone who's listening to this. But the hilarious thing about the Hollywood Game Night podcast is like, this is coverage no one asked for, and yet we dig into it so deep, we take it way more seriously than sure anyone who works on the show does. So
next week, it's all sports stars. So it's going to be Tara being like, who the fuck are these assholes? And me being like, well, actually,
I know.
Even though the two football players they got are like total like semi-celebrity, like they're just not at the level that you would bring back retired. I don't know. We'll get into it then. Listen to us over there.
I never watched the show. So my entire image of that show is entirely made up of you and Tara describing it.
So you definitely know all of the ladies who did or did not wear high heels on it.
That's right.
That's exactly what it is. And like what the sometimes I'm
loud.
Trying to envision like what the games look like. You're like, so there's these giant foam cubes, and I'm like, okay, giant foam. Trying to think about like what that would be like.
It would be like trying to understand football by going to like a fantasy draft weekend and listening to a whole bunch of people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And for the record, I know who four of the six people are. The only two that I didn't know were these apparently not very famous football players. So congratulations to me. Moving on.
Yes. Well done.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Okay. Here's what you do. You save up like most of a season of Drunk History and you watch them in your office and you laugh really hard, almost hard enough to pee a little. And then you try to describe some of the routines to your husband or some of the bits to your husband. And you do a really bad job because it's Drunk History and it doesn't really work like that.
But you crack yourself up again, and then your husband is laughing at you and not really at the jokes. And then you have dinner and you live your lives. And then it's bedtime and you turn on Ken Burns' Prohibition because you find Peter Coyote really soothing and it's good TV to go to sleep by. And then every time you see, like, for example, a horse in one of the old pictures in Prohibition, and then you remember that comedian calling a horse a fucking asshole and you start laughing. Or there's like a row of guys who are all holding up these giant steins of beer. And you remember Zach Guilford burping as the comedian. And then that guy popping up and saying, geez, in Derek Waters' voice. And you almost pee again in bed. Maybe you have bladder control problems now that you're telling the story. But anyway, I totally recommend mixing together drunk history and Prohibition in your viewing / marriage lifestyle.
Nice.
I love
the
it.
End.
My plug is for the In Search of Marathon Diary, which is finally in the home stretch. We're at the top of season 6. There's 2 more quote-unquote seasons, but it's only like 20 more episodes. I'm going to be running a tally to see how many more mentions of the goddamn Mayans inventing everything from the horoscope to math to sliced bread that they can stuff into the remaining 23 episodes. But Leonard Nimoy's outfits have not ever disappointed anywhere in the series run. Even though we're in like 1982 in series time, he's still dressing like it's 76. I hope you'll join me and get a load of the vintage visuals. It was a pretty amazing series, and yeah, we're wrapping it up in the Marathon Diary.
Can I say how much I enjoy whenever there's a piece of computer technology in the screenshots? Just like how
I do
far
those
we've
for
come.
You. Yeah, that it's just like a half a room size brick.
Yeah. And the monochrome monitors, even the orange ones. Everybody remembers the green ones. Not too many people remember the orange ones. You know who does? In Search of. That's who.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I'm going to start with my plug first because there's no coming back from what I'm going to play for my thing.
Oh, no.
I just want to plug a new podcast that is hitting later this week in a couple days. It is called Making the Sausage with Nick Reinwell Jones.
Frequent guest of this show.
Yeah. It is every 2 weeks, we hope, thereabouts. We will look at a different part of making television, usually different jobs or different aspects of making it. The first episode is production assistants, and it's a good one because production assistants are sort of, you know, at the low end of the totem pole, and so they got a lot of great stories to tell about everybody that's on top of them. And sure enough, the two people that are in the first episode had to be anonymous because they sling some shit. And they are working on some of today's most popular shows, and it's a fun ride. And Nick does a great job. The episode after that, I believe, is going to be Music Clearance, talking about people that get and clear music for your shows. And I think they're probably going to talk about, you know, the terrible fate of shows like 90210 and WKRP and what can be done about that or what cannot be done about that. And the episode after that, I'm a little hazy if this is going to be the third episode, but after that, we're going to be talking about pilot rejection. Mm. And we're going to be talking with our good friend Stephen Falk, who lived through that and got to the other side with You're the Worst. And also on that episode is going to be screenwriter John August. So lots of stuff coming.
Nice.
I've listened to the first episode, and it's really good. And what we're going to do is we're going to put the first episode on the Extra Hot Great feed so you can sample it. And if you like it, then you go over and visit and subscribe to Making the Sausage. I believe we're talking Wednesday for that.
Yep.
So yeah,
that's where it is on the calendar.
And on the content track, I'm back into 80s ads.
Oh,
and
no.
Here's the one I discovered this week that tickled my fancy.
For Oriental classics,
oh, no.
A whole new way to enjoy great Oriental dinners at home. You add fresh meat or chicken. We add crunchy vegetables, luscious sauce, and fluffy rice. It's the freshest sweet and sour you'll ever sink your chopsticks into. New Oriental classics from Betty Crocker. Fresh Oriental taste at home at last.
Oh, God. It keeps getting worse.
Forgiveness, please.
Oh, no.
This is a message for a person who isn't able to interact with chewing gum without revolting everyone around him.
This person has taken it upon himself to become a third parent to his twin sister, and a generally disappointing and judgmental one at that.
This individual seems to think he deserves a medal for working, which most teenagers do anyway, so he could pay for his own car, which he didn't even do because first he brought a crapmobile and then he left it in a Sketchola parking lot overnight while he was on drugs and came back to find it stripped. Problems his father paid for both times while trying to become his boyfriend.
This person has decided it's appropriate to address people in his orbit, not just peers, but also teachers, bosses, and his own mom and dad, at a volume better suited to ordering a raccoon off a front porch.
This young man, in a misguided attempt to create the intimidation his measly height cannot, walks as though he's trying to ring a large gong that's attached to his penis.
This person's hair is tall, dumb, and unnaturally hard.
Our thanks to the Palfrey Foundation for the ad time that brought you that wonderful piece of content. And the Palfrey Foundation would like to remind you that the best fruit in the world is raisins.
Well, the raisins out of the trail, mate.
I hate cashews and Brazil nuts are gross. You know what? Here is get the raisins. That's just the way it goes.
So you know what that means? Now, officially, the official fruit of Extra Hot Great and Again With This is once again raisins.
No!
Yay!
No!
All right, that music means it is time for the canon. Our guest Linda has brought something for consideration into the Extra Hot Great canon. Take it away, Linda.
All right. In 1993, a TV writer named Deborah Joy Levine developed a new romantic comedy for ABC, not unlike boy-girl detective shows like Moonlighting and Remington Steele and such. But in this case, the boy was Clark Kent and the girl was Lois Lane. In Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman, yes, I'm doing it, Terry Hatcher, then mostly known for being their real and their spectacular girlfriend on Seinfeld, was cast as Lois, and Dean Cain, freed from playing Brenda's dullard Wisconsinite reek over on 90210, was handed some foxy-ass glasses and cast as Clark. Levine left after the first season, and things got much more broad and kid-friendly in keeping with the 8 o'clock time slot that they had ended up with. But for that first season, it's a pretty good example of the goofy but ingratiating network rom-coms of the period, a tradition that held a lot of real estate at one time, but will be mostly gone once Castle and Bones shuffle off. Now, anyone will tell you that a show like this has a number of episodes that are totally inevitable. One is the episode where the leads are trapped together somewhere, they're snowed in, they're stuck in a basement, whatever. And another is the episode where they have to go undercover as a couple. Right in the middle of the first season, Lois and Clark combined these two tropes in the 11th episode, Honeymoon in Metropolis. The episode opens at the Daily Planet, where Lois is leaving the ink-stained wretches and acid-washed jeans behind for the day. Clark, along with boss Perry White, young Jimmy Olsen, and leopard print enthusiast and gossip columnist Kat Grant are razzing her about where she's going. In our first super clip, she insists she's just going to relax.
All right, if you must know, I am on my way to check into the Lexor Hotel for a night of pure relaxation.
It's a prison break upstate, isn't it? Mm.
Do you want to see my reservation?
Yes. Honeymoon suite?
The only thing available.
Lois Lane in the honeymoon suite.
Stranger things have happened.
Name one.
Thank you all very much. I'm leaving now.
Later, as Lois is kicking it in her heart-shaped hotel bathtub, Clark calls to find out if she's really relaxing. And while they're on the phone, she happens to look out the window and spy some kind of secret meeting next door that she instantly starts snapping pictures of. Hopefully, it is not a meeting about watching her taking a bath by a huge window. I don't know. After the credits, Lois is back at the planet the next day where everybody is examining the pictures. In our next super clip, they talk over what they know so far.
Isn't that
Congressman Ian Harrington?
Chairman of the House Defense Committee.
And the most notoriously sexy man in Washington.
Unsubstantiated rumors.
I'm the best kind.
Jimmy, who's that joker?
We don't know, but I'm running the identifier program looking for a match.
We do know the offices are leased to a company called Apocalypse Consulting.
That's right. It turns out that these potentially nefarious criminals eager to blend in have given their business the unassuming, definitely not attention-getting, absolutely not destined for an indictment name, Apocalypse Consulting. Just remember, it's not the end of the world when you need a consultant, but if it is, Apocalypse consulting. Lois wants to keep investigating, which means staying in the honeymoon suite for a while on her employer's dime. Good thinking, Lois. But Perry insists in our next super clip that she and Clark have to go together.
You need a cover. What better cover than honeymooners in the honeymoon suite?
It would be business, Lois. Strictly business.
Now that's the deal. Take it or leave it.
I'll take it.
Good.
Just don't try anything funny.
There you go. So Lois and Clark head to the honeymoon suite, and as they're settling in, note that a woman we will call Chekhov's Scandinavian housekeeper comes by with extra towels. Then they begin bantering in earnest as they face one of the basic elements of this trope in our next super clip.
Wait a minute. Aren't you forgetting something?
What?
Well, this is our first night here alone. Together.
So?
We flip for the bed.
How about I get the bed, I lend you a pillow?
How about we alternate nights?
How about we don't?
Well, it's a big bed. How about we share?
How about we alternate nights?
Deal.
Some business ensues with Clark rolling off the couch and levitating back onto it, and Lois in the bedroom deciding the best way to sleep in a suite you're sharing with a work colleague during a stakeout is in the nude. In the middle of the night, they spy on another evil meeting, but they're still confused. In the morning, Lois and Clark share a warm moment full of 8 o'clock appropriate sexual tension about the fact that they're both gorgeous with bedhead, which in fairness is true. Later at the Daily Planet, the gang gathers again to update the audience on what they know so far. The guy Harrington's been meeting is an arms dealer named Rourke, and this all has something to do with some test of some defense system. But to get to the bottom of the story, of course, they're going to have to go back to the honeymoon suite. That night, Lois and Clark entertain themselves during their downtime, and in our next super clip, you'll hear them in a montage playing the rom-com versions of Cards, Monopoly, Trivial Pursuit, and Scrabble.
Jen.
No way.
Read them and weep.
I can't make the rent.
I'll take everything you got and go directly to the poorhouse.
Time's up.
No, it's not. I know the answer to this. You just give it to me. Give it to me.
What is that?
It's my word.
There's no such word as chumpy.
Sure there is. Someone's a chump, therefore he's chumpy.
Try again.
Are you challenging me?
You bet your sweet little chumpy I am.
Okay. But when they're done, it's time to work. Now, they're just setting up all of the conspicuous spying equipment that nobody is supposed to know about when Chekhov's Scandinavian housekeeper comes humming down the hall. Clark, of course, hears her approach with his super ears and sees her with his X-ray eyes. And in our next super clip, he decides that the only logical response to this is to push Lois down on the bed and start making out with her so that the housekeeper doesn't notice the spy equipment or something.
But winning and losing is not the sole object,
Well,
Lois.
This is perfect. I win, you lose, we're both happy. Are you insane? Clark, this isn't funny!
This is the kissing.
Extra towels, yeah. Whoops. Sorry.
Yeah, whoops.
Doesn't anybody knock around here?
Womp womp.
Of course, the real reason he started making out with her was so they could put it in the ads for this episode, because kisses and other romantic moments that secretly don't count were basically the marketing plan for shows like this and were inserted via every device from dreams to memory erasure. On one occasion on this very show, by the way, Morgan Fairchild played a mad scientist who invented a perfume that made people want to do it with each other. And on another, H.G. Wells showed up with his time machine and was played by Bernie from Weekend at Bernie's. That's true.
Wow.
So this is actually on the low end of the scale of ridiculous ways to
How
wipe
come
the
we're
slate
not listening
clean.
To that episode? You'll have to come back.
It should be said, too, this is the kind of thing you couldn't put in a show now. I don't think people would think it was romantic to shove somebody around like this, even if you do love her so much that you will one day accidentally marry her frog-eating clone before you ultimately get around to marrying her. Later, Lois and Clark spy on Harrington and Rourke in the Apocalypse Consulting office park some more. Naturally, they're talking about evil, and Harrington wants to know what Rourke's evil plan actually is. Rourke offers to show him a VHS tape of a simulation of the evil plan. He is very prepared. The henchman, in preparation for the little movie, closes the blinds, which he apparently hadn't seen fit to do during all the plotting with a congressman, but we do live in a civilization, so you dim the lights for a film. What's more, Clark mutters, the blinds are lead-lined, so his X-ray vision doesn't work. You know how lead-lined window blinds are. So Lois and Clark can't see the video, but when it's over and the shutters are opened, Harrington says the greatest thing in the entire episode, maybe of the series and maybe of the 90s. Let's go to the mini super clip.
Rourke, you can't. Millions of people.
In for a penny, in for a pound.
I just want to, just that has to sink in for a second. While Clark is distracted.
Can't argue with that logic.
While Clark is distracted by a fax arriving in their hotel room, TM the 90s, Lois sneaks across the street to snoop, forcing Clark to put the tights on and go rescue her when Rourke and Harrington return unexpectedly. Unfortunately, while she's escaping, Lois drops her credit card because it's necessary for the plot. When she gets back to the hotel room, she learns that Clark, now back in civvies but not eager for Lois to know, Superman somehow showed up right after Clark saw she was in trouble, has accidentally not recorded video of what just happened in the other building. She assumes he's just too dumb to have remembered to reload the camera, and he assumes she's too dumb to see the crushed by his bare hands videotape lying on top of the trash can. Back at the planet later, one of the files Lois snooped in turns out to contain a plain sheet of paper with the word tsunami written on it in black letters. Apparently, the bad guys are using some kind of visualization technique where if you print out keywords from your evil plan in a large font, they will come true. Eventually, the team ties the word tsunami to something called Project Shockwave, but to find out what that is, Perry will have to call on a source who only meets him in underground parking garages and goes by the name Sore Throat. It's a little joke, see? Sore Throat, incidentally played by the wonderful character actor Richard Libertini, who died a couple weeks ago, explains that Shockwave is a defense system Congress recently approved that uses vibrations to kill incoming Russian missiles or something. Rourke is sabotaging it, so they'll buy a system from him instead and bribe Harrington to help the plan along. Sore Throat also says that Shockwave is made by Luther Technologies, which makes sense since Lex Luthor is the only person in Metropolis who makes or sells anything. When they get back to the hotel, Lois and Clark find that their room has been ransacked and Lois's credit card stuck to the door with a large knife. Clark quickly realizes there's also a bomb hidden in the couch, so while Lois inspects the bathroom, he sits on the couch and absorbs the explosion, which is why we could honestly say of this episode, when Dean Cain stands up, there is smoke coming off his pants. Yeah, there is. Later, we watch Lois sneak out alone to the Apocalypse Consulting incognito warehouse by the water, where she finds that Rourke has Harrington tied up. But naturally, she's then captured by one of the henchmen. Back at the planet, nobody knows where Lois is, and they're starting to worry. But into this worried tableau comes Lex Luthor, played by John Shea, who is awesome, as a combination of megalomaniac, mad scientist, and turtlenecked guy on Match.com who describes his ideal date as involving Tchaikovsky and tantric yoga. We hear from Lex in our last super clip.
Oh, Lex, what are you doing here?
Perry, Mr. Kent, Cat, whoever. Luthor Technologies has approximately $500 million in research and development tied up in a project codenamed Shockwave. Even the name is top secret, yet you, Mr. Kent, call me up. You tell me not only do you know about the project, but that you suspect that Thaddeus Rourke, a man with whom I've had previous unsatisfactory dealings, intends upon sabotaging the impending test, a test which commences in 6.5 minutes. So, under the circumstances, I might have elected to stay home and watch reruns of Flipper on the late-night cable channel, but I decided to come here. Now, what is going on?
By the way, Late Night Cable Channel is a cutting-edge reference at the time this episode is made. Lex's arrival
second
and that piece of paper...
reference in my life in 2 days. Weird.
Lex's arrival and that piece of paper with Tsunami on it help the team figure out what's happening. Rourke wants to sabotage Shockwave by making it cause a tsunami. Now, I know what you're thinking. He can't! Millions of people! But yes, he can. Lois, meanwhile, is in the middle of being tied up by Rourke along with Harrington and left to die when the wave hits. Rourke speeds off in his boat, and a lot of cheap stock footage of the Navy indicates the test is imminent. But here comes Clark. He unties Lois and Harrington, then he tells them to run and rips open his shirt to reveal the S within. In accordance with perfect physics logic, Superman dives into the water and corkscrews himself in the opposite direction of the tidal wave's curl, and he manages to stop it right before it washes Lois away with the power of its terrible green screen. Later at the planet, the team ties a bow around the story. Rourke is caught, and now that it's all settled, Lex will get the contract. Everybody does not necessarily know now. You should note that Lex is evil. And later, Clark catches his parents up on the phone, clearing up that he and Lois were only in the honeymoon suite for work, although his mother, played by the very great Kay Callan, teases him about how much he clearly digs her. And then Lois calls to tell Clark that she's spending one more night at the honeymoon suite. They flirt shyly, they sweetly say goodnight, and that's the show. I recognize that this is not an obvious canon pick. It's not Breaking Bad or Mad Men or The Simpsons, but it was my first online fandom, and episodes like this are a huge part of why I came to love television. It's nicely performed, it's written with a huge wink, it doesn't take itself too seriously, and it must be mentioned that Lois has the greatest chin-length bob of what was a pretty chin-length Bobby decade. I maintain that non-Golden Age genre shows, when lovingly made, are a good and decent and valuable part of TV history, and this is a nice representation of a very durable kind of series that I really wish they still made.
Can I go first?
Sure.
All right. So I remember back when we first started this podcast, back in, you know, the Mark One days, the first time we had Sarah Bunting on, I believe, she did a canon entry for a 90210 episode. I believe that we also just talked about recently on 90210 show.
Yep.
And around the same time, I think we also talked about Game of Thrones because it had just started, and how kind of like it was a little dark and wasn't really, you know, to our universal liking. And then I always remember the one guy's like, oh, I see, you don't like Game of Thrones, but you'll put 90210 in a canon. And I was like, yeah, because that's the way TV works. It doesn't have to be high art to be something that is worthy of your time and enjoyable. Like, you know, you can go to McDonald's and enjoy a burger. You don't have to go to the Michelin 3-star restaurant, you know, to get a steak. You know, you can have both. And when Linda put this up in the doc that this was going to be her canon thing, I'm like, oh boy, here we go.
Me too.
Yeah. But this is the thing with a canon. It's not all Breaking Bad. It's not all Mad Men. Certainly those are the easier sells. And I have to say, this was a fantastic argument, Linda. I enjoyed this episode on its... It was in the 90s, but if you told me it was in the 80s, I would have believed you. It was like some,
sure.
The set dressing, the, you know, just the terrible fashion. Can we talk about Miss Grant's white buckle affair that was in here? It's
Miss Grant's everything.
It looks like it's made out of dog collars, but like not that kind of dog collars, like little chihuahua collars.
Dave was like, why is this prostitute at the newspaper office?
Well, she starts off with that like leopard print off the shoulder number.
Yes.
It's just like, oh my
She's
lord.
So the best out thing of about place her. In the show.
So, well, anyways,
it's,
that.
And it's. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead, Joe.
I'll handle it in mine. Well, I was just going to say, because Tracy Scoggins is the woman who plays her, and she's like, I only know her from like Skinamax B movie, like semi fandom. She was on this show. This like gay softcore porn show called Dante's Cove, which co-starred Linda Yule in particular, be interested to know, Riken Lemkuhl from The Amazing Race. Yes. Dave, continue.
All that was just to say that you know, there are many approaches to the canon, and with the enjoyable time capsuliness of this piece of work is how I came at it. I really enjoyed the cartooniness of it, which I kind of like forgot. Like, there is a scene Linda was mentioning where Superman is sort of having a rest on the floor and he just levitates himself like a magician onto the couch. There is another scene where he does his morning workout in about 3 seconds, pulling off about 200 push-ups in about 3 seconds. But my absolute favorite is the bomb in the couch at the end.
Oh my God. Out of fart absorption.
It is right out of Looney Tunes. Like, okay, first of all, there's a bomb in the couch. Then he sits on it, and when it explodes, it does like, you know, he lifts half an inch, just like a cartoon, like that's as much as the bomb would do. It leaves a perfect Acme Roadrunner, Acme industrial hole shape thing in the couch, with seared edges around, like the couch is fine, except for like the seared edge around this perfect circle.
Lois never comments on it at all. Never notices there's a missing...
There's no smell in the TV world. And then, of course, it has a perfect kind of smokiness to it. Like somebody just put like a hot turkey inside of...
It reminded me, it's one of my favorite Simpson scenes of all times when he's got the gin still in the basement that keeps exploding.
Kablamo!
And he's trying to cover it with Marge, and he just goes, oh, kablamo! Oh, excuse me.
My other really favorite part was all the non-union Mexican counterpart board games they were playing. And here's my imagined...
The hotels and their fake Monopoly were so big.
So here's what they were playing. 100% Business Time, Scribble, and Answer Pursuit were the games that they were playing.
I'm pretty sure that was a Trivial Pursuit card, by the way. When they show it, it looks exactly like a Trivial Pursuit card for reals.
All right. So those are all the things I really loved about this episode. Here is the one giant disappointment about this episode, which is why couldn't we see the computer simulation transferred onto the VHS tape?
Because no one wanted to make it. It would be too expensive.
I was disappointed at the time, but then when you fast forward to the end of the episode and you see that tsunami effect and Superman doing the corkscrew throw it, and I'm pretty sure I'm not even sure they reversed the tsunami as the way they showed that it was falling back. I think they actually squished the horizontal. Like, I think it just got shorter and stouter. I don't think they actually reversed the tape. It was an amazingly poor effect. I was thinking, oh, that was so bad. How awesome would that tape have been of their evil tsunami plans?
The 90s version of the Taiwanese animation of local...
Walk over to the Babylon 5 offices, fire up that Amiga 2000, and show that tape.
Yeah.
Also, I love the fact that some office across the street has... lead lined blinds. It was so random, without explanation. There it is. Oh, yep. Sorry, Soups. We got the deluxe levelors here at Apocalypse Consulting.
Levelors.
Yeah. We really got upsold when we went to go buy these curtains. That salesman was really convincing.
Anyways, that was a great entry. I thoroughly enjoyed it. We were after we watched the episode, it was like, well, that was a thing. It was a time capsule. It is certainly like very indicative of what was going on there. I was wondering before you put this up, I had guesses of all the shows you were going to do. This wasn't one of them, but I was close. I was thinking Moonlighting.
Thought about it.
What was the other one you mentioned? You mentioned another one that I thought of, but the other one was Scarecrow and Mrs. King. I thought might have made an appearance.
Remington Steel.
Remington Steel. Yes, thank you. That was the one I was thinking of. So I was in the right. I was in the right area. And super, super fun, Linda, and a great entry.
I will go next. You can't really start pulling at the thread of this plot because it really unravels. For example, and Lois, first of all, just walks into the office where all the nefarious plans are happening. It's locked, and that's why her credit card is out, that she uses her credit card to get in. I assume that's why it's loose and not in her wallet to fall out of her pocket. But also, the henchman has left his jacket in the office after leaving it, and the key to the filing cabinet is in his pocket. Lois just happens to reach into it and finds it immediately. Obviously,
he's not a very good henchman.
No. And there, the business of the bomb and the, whatever else, but also that they've set up all of this super secret spy equipment in their hotel room and then they leave. Like, it's a hotel. Even if the henchmen hadn't found their way there to toss the room, the fucking the Scandinavian maid would have come in and seen everything they had set up.
And that her accent. Oh,
yeah, hello.
Extra towels,
your video camera. they're not the greatest, at being undercover, obviously. But the treat of watching this episode, Linda, was knowing that you picked it and knowing why, because it's the Linda-iest thing that ever happened. And by that, I mean, watching it and knowing you, I know why you picked it. And there's so much of this that is like, it's reflective of what I know about you and your pleasures in life. And like the rom-communist of it is so charming. I laughed at many times. It is totally a time capsule. Yet Terry Hatcher and Dean Cain really have good chemistry. They're so fun to watch together. And what I was surprised by, because I didn't really watch the show when it was on, was that it is so much more of a rom-com than it is a superhero show. Like, there's no, Superman doesn't fight anyone. He fights the Wave, but that's kind of it. Like, even when he goes to save her in the office, he doesn't really do any superhero stuff particularly, except move really fast and, you know, uses heat vision to set off the sprinkler. So it's not at all like the superhero shows of today, really.
And frankly, since he was trying to make sure nobody saw him, he really didn't have to put the suit on. You know what I mean? No, he should have gone over there and been Clark, it seems to me.
Anyway. Yes, he should. Although, don't, I guess, with his glasses on, maybe he couldn't have used his heat, whatever. Again, let's not pull at the plot threads.
Branding.
Yeah, right. Just two other stray thoughts. Linda, you already mentioned this. The stock footage of all the naval stuff is like, the fact that someone cared so little, it was like, just put in anything. I don't care if it's from 1951, which it clearly is. Like, it doesn't matter. That's not why people are watching the show, for like pure verisimilitude. Speaking of which, the guy whose character is named Thaddeus Rourke is the least Thaddeus Rourke looking person that ever was.
Yeah.
He's like this little spark plug looking guy. His name should be, you know, Bill Withers or something. That's an R&B star.
He's not a person.
Bill
not a,
something.
He's not a strong character, but for that name alone, we got to get him in a room with Truxton Spangler.
for
yes.
real. But yes, this was really fun to watch, Linda. Thank you for giving it to us. It actually made me want to watch more of the show, and I was certainly not expecting that when I went into it. So thank you. Who is next?
I guess I'll go next. I don't think I'm going to watch any more of these, but this was really fun, not least because we got to hang out with Dean Cain for almost a full hour without any "you will spoil it" horrible accent work happening. Like, getting him out of that milieu, as it were, was really great. And this is almost like you proposed the mid-90s for the canon. Yeah. It's so 90s-y. From horns and the piano on the interstitial moments on the soundtrack, to like the fact that no matter how expensive whatever someone's wearing actually was, which on this show was probably not, but anyway, it looks cheap. And like everything is decorated in peach on TV at this point in history.
Also, the lighting is very harsh, also, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no like
orangey.
Yeah. Also, the computer simulated Superman cape credits is very of that time too.
with the music by Shmon Schmilliams.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the timing of it is very, it reminded me of Monk, actually, that there's this like dad jokey timing to it that like, yeah, it's dad jokey, but it's still timed flawlessly for that. Like, Libertini's like, well, he is, and just zipping off. It's just so funny. And then Tracy Scoggins, like, I don't know why she's wearing those things. But when he's like, sources are the lifeblood of journalism, and she has that beat, and she's like, People Magazine. Like, I don't know. Just funny.
Yeah.
And I was talking about this with the Televerse gang. Mark Blankenship and I are going to be on the Televerse next week talking about Law and Order. We recorded it yesterday, and we were talking about how formulaic shouldn't be negative. Because if you follow a formula, like, you know, Coke has a formula, and Coke's pretty delicious, actually. Like, there's nothing inherently wrong with formulae, especially when they're followed really well to get fun, fizzy chemistry like this. And the show knows exactly what it is, and it executes on that perfectly. So it was a really... I mean, parts of it were like, oh my God, this is not good and it's so 90s, but it was charming in that way. Like,
yeah,
it's, I mean, in terms of like voting for the canon, like this episode is like perfectly itself as far as the show goes, yeah. I think, and was just fun. Like there were parts of it that were poor quality without being like bad or boring. So yeah, I really enjoyed it. I'm not surprised, but I enjoyed it in a different way than I thought it was going to. Joe, hit it.
Sorry, if I may, just to put another terrible analogy out there, as far as 90s and delightfulness, and but really kind of, you know, at the same time, perhaps useless. This is basically the McDLT of 90s TV shows, which is like, oh, it's kind of fun to put this burger together. And look at that. They put hot on one side and cold on the other. Yeah. That's kind of cute.
Yeah.
I like how they work together. Yeah. But, you know, it's off the menu
you,
now.
Show.
That's okay, too.
And, wow, this is twice as much styrofoam.
Joe.
So, in addition to the fart couch scene, my favorite scene, Linda, you mentioned it a little bit, was the scene at the end where his parents call him and his mom is so adorably cute about sort of prodding him in the direction of Lois as a romantic interest. And it was just, it was a really cool scene. I think the show works for me on a sort of macro level. I like everything about what the show is and represents. It's cool. It's a cool twist on a romantic comedy series in that it's about, it's a romantic comedy, but what if it was about Superman?
Yeah.
And it's a cool twist on a superhero show. It's Superman, but what if it was in, you know, a sort of screwball romantic comedy setting? It was, had to have been cool and sort of like liberating to not have to worry, like to make a show about Superman and not have to worry about things like canon and fidelity to whatever and fanboys. And I'm sure like whatever, I'm sure, you know, fans of Superman were probably up in arms about this particular vision of Superman, but you didn't have to hear about it back then as much. So like that was probably very nice.
Oh yeah, that's true. It was before the internet was really invented.
Like, can you imagine trying to make something like this today and people would just be like shitting out their eyeballs?
Excuse me. Especially this episode, which I sort of planned to vote in the minute the like visual cues of Superman 2 and their trip to Niagara Falls started. I was like, oh, a little heart-shaped tub. I'm in.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's a very good point. That's a very good callback. I think universally, I like that a show like this exists. I understand like its importance in the fact that you're totally right. Like, there are shows that don't have to be like capital I important television or like whatever the golden age of mean men or whatever.
Or have to have an anti-hero.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is good TV. I like so many shows of its sort of type or analogous to it back then. I don't think I like this particular show. And I think it's just a matter of just like, it's not quite my thing. It doesn't quite trip my like, you know, pleasure centers or whatever. I don't love Terry Hatcher.
Try stuffing it in the couch. Sorry.
Didn't think that through.
Now we're really in a horrible place.
Well, now we're in a place. Oh, God.
And I'm not sure we can get back. Sorry.
I wish I liked Terry Hatcher more. I agree about the Bob. Jane Mancini from Melrose Place, speaking of which, would have killed for that Bob. But
and may have.
Yeah. I thought Dean Cain, I like how Dean Cain perfectly projects slight stupidity so well, not in this, but like in everything. It's just like, God, you're so adorable and just like, and ever so dumb. And it's just so nice. But yeah, I think the chemistry between them is as good as it's going to get with the fact that I don't like what Terry Hatcher's doing on a sort of like the flighty, capable matrix that she's sort of putting forth there. I think it's a fantastic presentation. I think it's just decidedly not for me, but like kudos for bringing good TV that doesn't have to be like very important TV.
All right. So I say, let's put this a vote. Let's start with our, with Joe, this century's apparently greatest monster. How about you?
Yes, apparently the 90s greatest monster. I vote no.
So Joe, how about you?
He said no.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
I said no.
Don't make him say it four times.
Don't make me say it again.
Then Candyman comes out. This whole thing. Sarah,
yeah, exactly.
Yes, DS.
Tara Ariano.
Me too. I can't vote against this. I'll be voting against Linda herself in her essence.
And Reek.
Yeah, and if you asked me before I watched this episode, if this was being the canon, I would have said, yeah, absolutely not. But I had a ball.
Yeah,
it was fun.
Too.
This is a great canon entry. Thank you, Linda. So that's 3-1, which means... Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman, Season 1, Episode 11, Honeymoon in Metropolis. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Can.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
All right, everybody, it is time for Winner and a Loser of the Week. Tara has the winner.
Joe, close your ears. The winner is Slender Man, apparently. I remember when I first read about this, that Slender Man was a thing, like, I tweeted about it, and then Joe, like, fell down the same Slender Man internet rabbit hole that I did.
Oh, what a day that was.
Even then, once you
what
know
a
it's
scary
then
day.
They put it on SVU, and I also sailed into the abyss with y'all.
Anyway, the reason Slender Man is the winner of the week is that apparently that is going to be the topic of American Horror Story Season 6, which I should know better than to be cautiously optimistic about the show by now, yet I am. That's kind of a fun idea, and it's very different from anything they've ever done before, so good job, Slender Man. We'll see you next fall.
And Loser of the Week?
Speaking of monsters made manifest, our loser is the reading public. Danielle Staub, formerly of The Real Housewives of New Jersey, is writing another tell-all in which she like released some, they called it a press release, but it was like a series of badly spelled Instagram posts, shocker, in which she announced that she was breaking her silence, like, after, what, 90 consecutive sentences or seconds during which you were probably asleep? Like, how about you resume a silence first before you break it? Better yet, eat some bees.
I'm just concerned that she's writing another tell-all, which tells me her first was a tell-some.
Yeah.
Good point,
true.
Dave.
Flagrant false
Danielle.
Advertising.
What do you think about that legal argument, Linda?
Perfect. Very convincing.
Yes.
All right. Oh.
Oh, God.
Hello, it's me, 19th century stock market investor Dracula. Blah. Oh, I'm God. Here with a very special guest. Oh, hello, Draculas. It's me, official Duke of Extra Who Greats, Gordon Lightfoots. So, Gordon, do you remember what we did last night after the concert? Oh, yeah, Count. We goes for special late night snacks. We both like to eat the raw moot. That's right, my canine friend. We took a table there at IHOP, International House of Pancakes. And while the pancakes and bacon were their usual delicious selves, what was really on the menu was the guy sitting at the next table. Oh yeah, normally I not eat humans, but Dracula makes sounds so delicious. You know it, Gordon. So we trot him in the alleyway on his way out, and he's all like, oh no, please don't kill me, creatures of the night. Yeah, I little embarrassed for him. He start to cry. I have amazing wife named Steph. It's her birthday next week. She's the most wonderful mother to our daughter Amelia. Oh yeah, he lays it on pretty thick, say Dracula. Oh, Gordon Lightfoot, I've heard it all before. Maybe in another lifetime it could have moved me, but not now. Not when the price over earnings ratio of stock market companies so low. But Dracula, he says to me something very interesting to Doug. He says, my beautiful wife, Steph, does pretty good jobs providing special treats to their cat, Chuck. Now, Drax, he says two things important to me. I hear treat. I hear cat. So you convinced me to make me take you to his house. And then what happened then, my furry friend? Oh, Dracula. We find whom in love like no others. Husbands and wives. Oh, mothers and daughters, fathers and daughters. It even bring tear to most famous vampire. Yeah, I'm not made of stone, Gordon. I knew then that I could not tear this family asunder. Oh, Drac, I eat the cat's truth, so. Oh, that's okay, Gordon. I eat the cat, too. Oh, no. Well, that brings up an interesting question, Gordon. Do you know what time it is? Nose? Do you know what time it is, guys?
Time to wish happy birthday to Steph.
It is!
Happy birthday,
birthday,
Steph!
Oh, God.
means it is game time. And this is the first game time of the season. Fresh starts, new beginnings, guys.
Exciting.
Today's game time comes from David Bindley, I believe is how you pronounce it. Uh-huh. One of our mods on the forums who earns himself an extra credit. Redeemable for an extra hot, great mini topic of his choosing. All right, David is back with another Is This Anything? This time it is This Anything Competitive Edition? Mm. 13 rounds of true or false questions answering the question, is this anything, about reality and game shows.
Okay.
All right. It's pretty simple. True or false, we should probably go through them relatively fast.
Okay.
There are a lot of questions. Let's throw it to Picky to
every
see who's
every time you
go
say
first.
That, it takes forever, but let's do it anyway.
I know, but I say it every time anyways.
We will start with Sarah.
All right. Our order is this. Sarah, Joe, Linda, Tara.
Okay.
All right. Are we ready to play Is This Anything Competitive Edition?
Yes.
All right. Yes. Here we go. Sarah D. Bunting. Yeah. Round one. Is this the name of a wipeout obstacle? Big balls. Big balls.
Yes.
You are correct.
For 1 point, right?
Yep. Okay. Everything's 1 point. Joe Reed, hey. Dirty balls.
Yes.
That was not his answer.
Dirty balls.
No, I'm still mulling.
Got it.
That's what she said.
No?
It is.
Oh, boy.
Linda Holmes, K.O. Corral.
Yes.
It is not.
What?
Certainly sounds like it should be, though.
That's not what the punch wall is called?
No.
I thought it was, okay.
I think it's just called the punch wall.
Okay.
Tara.
Yeah.
Throatisserie.
Throatisserie? Yes.
Ew.
Correct.
See, Sarah heard throat, whereas I heard throw is what I'm guessing.
Not throat. It's not sore throat coming back.
No.
For off.
Oh, Jesus.
Sarah Bunting, bad buoys.
Yes.
You are correct. It is.
Yes.
Joe Reed, banana hammocks.
Oh, God.
I want to believe.
I know, I want to believe it so bad. I'm going to say no again.
It is.
Damn it!
Linda Holmes, smash hit.
Tara.
What is that?
Smash hit. Like billboard smash hit.
No.
Whoops, you are correct. Sorry, that is false. You are correct. That is good for a point.
Yep.
All right. Linda on the board. Comma.
It doesn't sound enough like someone getting punched in the nads, so I knew it was fake.
That's good logic. I like it. Comma, Kazi.
Comma,
like,
yeah, Kazi?
Like the punctuation
mark. I'm going to say no.
It is true. That is true. All right,
very
moving on.
Very witty wipeout.
To round two. Round two. Is this someone who has hosted a game show or reality show?
Okay.
Sarah Bunting, Whoopi Goldberg.
Yes.
Incorrect. She is not. Penn Jillette. Joe.
I feel like that's wrong.
Game or reality show.
Hosted a game show or reality show. Yes, he has.
You are correct. Greg Kinnear, Linda.
No.
He has.
He has?
Yep.
Okay.
I can fill out details.
Sounds wrong.
Wrong. Game over. Everybody go home. William Shatner.
He has to have, right? I'm going to say yes.
You are correct. Sarah Bunting, any star of the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
That seems so broad that I feel like I'm being tricked into saying yes. Or tricked into saying no because I should say yes. So it's either no or yes, right?
So you've narrowed it down is what you're saying. Mm-hmm.
So okay. It's not an eh or 12. Let's say yes.
Correct.
Nice.
Wow.
Joe.
Woo.
Any opening credits cast member from Friends?
Hosted a game show or reality show? Where was that? What was that season that Lisa Kudrow hosted The Mole?
The one in my heart.
When Jennifer Aniston hosted Blowout.
I feel like Courtney Cox's time being married to David Arquette might come into play here, that the two of them might have hosted something. I'm going to say yes.
Incorrect. Nobody has.
They produced a reality show together. It was like a home decorating show, but I don't think she was actually on it.
Any opening credits cast member from Charlie's Angels, Linda, hosted a game show or reality show?
Charlie's Angels. I am going to say no.
Yes, and I asked for information and I did not get it in time, so look it up on Google, people.
Sheer Genius, right?
Yeah, it was Sheer Genius.
Jacqueline Smith hosted Sheer Genius.
Damn it.
Stylist.
That
was the show I was thinking of when I said Blowout.
Aha, there we go.
Womp womp.
That was a different Bravo hair show. Yes.
Tara.
Yes.
Anybody who has canonically played the Doctor.
Sure.
Nope. Womp womp.
Okay.
All right. Round three, guys. Is this the title of an America's Next Top Model episode?
America's.
Oh, yeah.
America's. Not the America's Next Top Model hybrid.
Oh, that would be great, though, wouldn't it? You know, like
the wigs.
Yeah, but the, what's the syndicate or the whatever, you know, like they're trying out. Yeah, they're trying out new spies and they have to do all these tasks.
Not kidding, Woodwatch.
The Residenter is Next Top Model.
The girl who was Nikita.
Yeah. All right, is this the title of America's Next Top Model episode number 17 for Sarah?
Spread Eagle.
Spread Eagle.
The girl who falls at the final hurdle.
No.
You are correct. That is not.
Nice.
Jari.
Nice.
The girl who thinks her makeover is terrible.
Oh, well, that's a thing that's happened every season. I would hope that it was at least the title once, so I'm going to say yes.
That's not the question, Joe.
I'm saying yes. My answer is yes. Damn it!
What?
For Linda, number 19, the girl who everyone thinks is killing herself. Jesus.
That is definitely one.
You are correct.
Yep.
Tara.
Yeah.
The girl who doesn't understand personal space.
No.
Whoops, you're correct. Sorry. I see false and I hit the wrong button. You are. That was good for a point.
Okay.
Sarah Bunting. The girl who licks the floor.
Oh, Lisa. Oh, geez. Yes.
Yep.
Wow.
Nice.
Joe, the girl who floats like a butterfly and stings like a bee.
Bees.
Okay. All right. All right, top model. You won't defeat me. Yes?
Correct.
Oh, thank God.
Jeez. Thanks. I answer.
Master chef delay there.
All right, Linda, the girl who wants to pet a... the girl who wants a pet snake.
Yes.
No, was not.
I know everyone else's.
Tara.
Yeah.
The girl who mutilated the precious brownies.
That one is for sure.
Yeah, you are.
That
is the best episode. That's the best top model episode.
Oh my God.
Oh boy.
It's our time for our first score break.
Okay, Joe and Linda are tied with 2 each. I have 4. Sarah has 5.
All right.
Very, very close still.
10 rounds to go. Lots of time for everything to change. Here on round 4, is this anything?
Yep.
Is this a lyric from a Eurovision Song Contest entry?
Oh, no.
Oh, God.
God, just say yes to everything. It could be every time.
Sarah Bunting. Don't let the planets take control of our lives. Believe in the truth and not celestial lies.
Space.
Yes.
Correct. Ireland, 1981.
Ireland.
Joe Reed. Some younger guys with roving eyes may tantalize you with their lies. You must be wise and realize.
Also, just good life advice.
Just
good life advice.
Nah.
I mean, it seems too, like, banal to have, like, made up, so I'm just going to say yes.
You are correct.
All right.
That's a recent entry from the UK 2015. Linda.
Well done, UK.
and if you thought you had me fooled, I'm telling you, objection overruled.
Oh, Bicky.
I have no basis on which to say anything about any of these, but I'm going to say no.
You're correct.
Wow.
Nice. That was the rejected Judge Judy entry. The one
from Judge Judistan.
Yes.
Tara.
Yeah.
Stop. Don't say that it's impossible, because I know it's possible.
Yes.
Sweden, 2011.
Sweden.
Sarah Bunting. Oh, you're my best friend in the world we must defend. Oh, you're my best friend in the world we must defend.
Oh, yes.
Incorrect. That is the original Pokemon theme.
Wow. Sadly, my nephew would be really annoyed that I missed that.
Probably. Joe Reed, don't let your indecision take you from behind. Don't let your indecision take you from behind, Joe.
Yeah, don't do
picky,
that.
Picky, you homophobe. I'm going to say yes.
All right, get this.
Nice.
UK 1981, and it was the winner.
Oh, my God.
That bomb shook it off.
That Linda was Holmes. From an English-speaking country. That's amazing.
I never imagined I'd find you and lose myself instead.
No.
Yes. Denmark, 2009.
Denmark.
Wow.
Tara Ariano. Yeah. I love Latvia. Got it deep inside. I love Latvia. Feel it in my mind.
I'm going to need you to say that again, just because.
I love Latvia. Got it deep inside.
Right.
I love Latvia. Oh. Feel it in my mind.
Is that where you feel it?
Okay.
Correct. But get this. Was a song just from a different country. That somehow was from Belarus.
Belarus.
Yeah. Sarah D. Bunting. A passion killed by acid rain. A roller coaster in my brain. But how would you know?
Sure.
Correct.
Nice.
Iceland, 2007.
Oh.
Yeah. Joe Reed, they all want me. They can't have me, so they all come and dance beside me.
But what's the song lyric, Dave?
Okay, that's the Macarena, which I don't think was Eurovision, so I'm going to say no.
You are correct. That is the English version of the Macarena.
Thank you for not leaving me alone in my recognition of that.
Yeah, no problem.
Hey, Macarena.
Linda Holmes, you're my fire, you're my desire. Shame on you.
But what's the song lyric?
Yeah, what's the song lyric though?
I will say yes.
True, Denmark, 2004.
Denmark!
Jeez, all right, Denmark.
Ending round four. Had to come to an end sometime. Oh, fuck me. This is French. All right. Oh, boy.
That's not the song lyric.
Not happy about this guy. Je suis un pupille de sir, C-I-R-E. Un pupille de sang.
Better than Brenda.
I think that's I'm a doll of wax, a doll of sound, if I'm correctly interpreting your French quote accent, unquote. I'm going to... Sure, yes.
Luxembourg, 65.
Luxembourg.
Wow. Old one.
Holy shit.
Oh, that was fun. All right.
Luxembourg, 65 is the sequel to... The prequel to Deutschland 83.
Yeah, exactly.
Would watch.
Nothing happens.
Everyone's pretty nice. Yeah. It's great.
It's a really short series.
Yeah. Takes 2 hours to, you know, cover the country like we're spies. They're done. Round five.
Take that, Luxembourg.
Is this the on-screen name of a player from any English language Big Brother?
Oh, God.
Okay. Oh, God.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
Sarah, Sarah D. Bunting, space.
That's actually
sure.
The...
Yes.
No.
You outsmarted yourself.
Joe Reed, science. Yeah.
So wait, so the idea is that this is somebody's name on a version of Big Brother?
I guess.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
English. English version.
Yeah, some English language version. One of those awful European ones. I'm going to say yes.
Science is.
Wow.
Linda Holmes, Romeo.
I assume so, yes.
Correct. Juliet?
No.
Yeah,
what?
You didn't get fooled. Sarah, dog face. Pronounced dog facade.
Dog facade.
Dog face.
Dog face. I'm going to say no.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
God.
Joe Reed, hot dogs. Yes. Hot dogs.
Hot dogs, plural?
Plural.
Oh, boy.
Tara asked exactly the same question I had.
Yeah, I would like, assume if it was your name, Hot Dog. Yeah, Hot Dog sounds fine. I'm going to say no.
Yep, Hot Dog
oh my
is.
God.
Jesus.
All right, for Linda, Dino.
Oh, definitely.
Tara, yep. Rex.
No.
Yes. Ah. Sarah, Red.
Red or bread?
Red, like the color.
Good question, though, Sarah.
There was probably a bread.
Well, it's just because I was thinking Rex, the tiny armed boom mic operator from 90210, and then bread, which is on Gil's head.
Sure.
But it's red, and I'm going to say yes.
Correct.
Yes.
Joe, cherry.
Cherry. Cherry. Seems fairly common, so I'm going to say yes.
Bubble, Linda. Bubble. Singular.
Bubble?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Tara, sunshine.
Yes? Yes. Okay.
Correct. Round six, guys. Is this a song used for a RuPaul's Drag Race elimination?
Nice.
Joe's time to shine.
I'm going to get killed.
Sarah Bunting, It's Raining Men. It's Raining Men, Sarah.
No, I don't think so.
It was.
Wow.
Joe Reed, I Will Survive.
Yeah, I think that happened at some point.
What?
No, really?
Oh, my wow. God.
Linda Holmes, If I Could Turn Back Time.
Definitely.
Not. Definitely not.
Astonished.
Shit. We're all wrong.
Wow. They must be saving some of these for, like, the series finale.
Yeah, this sounds like somebody's wish list now. Yep. It's like, I guess they didn't do it.
Tara Ariano, I'm so excited.
Yes?
Correct.
Okay.
Sarah Bunting, I Am Woman.
Yes.
Nope.
Damn it.
Wow.
JR.
Yep.
I'm Every Woman.
Yeah, I think that happened.
You are correct. Linda Holmes, Man, I Feel Like a Woman.
I'm going to say yes.
Nope.
Wow.
Tara Ariano, Material Girl.
No.
Correct. Ooh. I have a theory about this. You could probably go through that based on royalty fees.
Mm.
Bigger the artist, the less chance it was on that list.
Perhaps.
Yeah. All right, guys.
Whitney Houston, though.
Hmm?
Whitney Houston, I'm Every Woman.
Oh, that's true. All right, okay. Let's hear the scores, Tara.
All right, still very close. Linda has 6. Joe and Sarah have 8. I have 11.
All right. This is round 7. Is this is this a show any of the Baldwin brothers has competed on?
Competed.
Oh.
Okay.
Sarah Bunting, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
No.
Yes, Alex.
Oh.
Alex has been on
a
Who
Celebrity
Wants to be
Edition,
a
I guess.
Joe Reed.
Dick.
Celebrity Fit Club.
Yeah, I think Daniel Baldwin was on that one.
Absolutely correct.
Nice.
Should have been.
Linda Holmes, Jeopardy.
I'm going to say yes.
Oh.
Wow.
That's surprising.
Tara Ariano, Dancing with the Stars.
No.
You are correct. Sarah Bunting, Wheel of Fortune.
Oh, hell.
Wheel of
All
Fortune.
All right, I'm overthinking it. Yes.
No!
Shit!
Joe Reed, Celebrity Big Brother UK.
I mean, they've had everybody with Big Brother UK. Like, I'm sure, like, it's just crazy to think that Stephen Baldwin wouldn't have been on that show at some point, so I'm going to say yes.
Correct. Yeah. Get this, Stephen and Daniel Baldwin.
Oh, no.
There we go. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Linda Holmes, one of your favorite shows, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Celebrity Bull Riding Challenge. We talked about white Broncos at the start of this show. Now let's talk about them at the end.
Celebrity bull riding
challenge. Which I have to just say is a real show. It's not a trick question.
It was.
I feel like this was the show where Jewel met her husband or something like that. Is that a thing?
They were already engaged.
Oh, okay. There
was also late Sarah. On
it. I'm going I'm going to say yes.
You are correct, Linda. That was Steven.
Sarah, the fact that you know that is like my favorite thing of 2016.
Celebrity tennis.
Celebrity tennis?
Yeah.
No.
That's celebrity.
Yes. Alec Baldwin on Celebrity Tennis.
That's amazing. I didn't know that was
round eight.
Okay.
Is this
my favorite thing is I spent that whole round thinking, is Celebrity Rehab considered competing?
good point.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, guys, you're competing with yourself to become a better person.
Right.
Round eight, exactly. Is this a Project Runway unconventional material?
Okay.
Why don't we just remove round eight from the scores? So round nine.
David. Yeah. Just kidding. Thank you for doing this game, David.
Round nine.
Yes.
Is this the location of an Amazing Race pit stop?
Oh, boy. Bump.
Back to Linda's old stomping grounds.
Mm-hmm.
Melbourne, Australia, Sarah.
I'm going to say no.
You would be correct. Muscat, Oman, for Joe.
Oman.
Oh, Iman.
Right. That's a tough one.
Yes.
You are correct. Linda, Machu Picchu, Peru.
Definitely.
Surprising.
Ah. Which kind of makes sense, because that's
that
a
would
slog.
That would be very laborious.
That shit is high.
Well, they went.
Almost spit.
We were there. That's weird. Anyway, go ahead.
But it has to be a pit stop.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. I think that's what confused me.
Madrid, Spain.
For me?
Yep.
Yes.
No.
Whoa.
Sarajevo in Bosnia and Herzegovina.
For Sarah.
Welcome to Sarajevo. I am going to say yes.
Novosibirsk, Russia.
Novosibirsk, I think.
Sibirsk, Russia.
I'll guess yes.
You would guess correctly. Linda, oh, fuck me. I'm just going to spell it. Ljubljana, Slovenia.
Sure.
Oh, sorry.
After all,
there's
that.
Another one I'm just going to spell because I'm done with these names. Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso.
Ouagadougou.
How do you say it?
Ouagadougou.
Thank you.
No. Shit.
Simply Belgium for Sarah.
What?
Belgium.
Just Belgium, the whole country.
It's a country. Their chief
Simply
export is waffles.
Belgium.
It does sound like a slogan for their like tourism board.
Yeah.
Simply Belgium.
Or like it's really easy to get there. They just shoot you out of a cannon. I'm stalling because I'm not sure. Let's say yes.
Nice.
Kenya, Joe. Pit stop in Kenya.
It's Namibia, jackass.
Never forget.
Yes.
Linda, pit stop in Paraguay.
No.
Yes.
Is that the sequel to Moon Over Parador?
I'm not going to get a single thing right this whole time.
Tar Arietto.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Canada.
talking about standard Amazing Race, right?
That's correct.
I'm going to say no.
You would be correct. Visited twice, but no pit stops. No pit stops. All right. So after the confusion of round eight, let's go to the scores again.
All right. Well, Linda has 7. Sarah has 10. Joe has 11. I have 13.
All right.
Okay.
Very good. Round 10. Is this a real British game show? Sarah Bunting, Decimate.
Decimate.
Great name.
Yeah.
That for and for like total language slash math nerds who are like, it actually means that you take
one out of every ten.
I would totally watch that because I'm an asshole. However, I do not believe it is real. No.
Yep, it's a real show.
Wow.
Decimate.
I bet it's something like 1 versus 100 or something.
Yeah,
like
maybe.
That.
Yeah, probably.
That would make sense.
Joe Reed, pointless.
No.
Yeah. Pointless is like, I believe if I'm thinking the right one, it's sort of like a Family Feud kind of thing where the goal is to have 0 points at the end of the game or something.
Oh,
something
that's like fun.
Maybe conflating two shows together. Mm. Linda Holmes, Reflex.
Yes.
Correct.
Nice.
Zeitgeist.
No.
Correct, it is not. Sarah D. Bunting, The Cube.
Yes.
Tipping Point, Joe.
Yes.
Trick question for Linda. Oh, dear.
That's mean. She's our valued guest.
Trick question.
I think we've all just been incepted.
Oh, we're going to, you know what, guys? I think we just created a Mobius. We're done. This is it. This podcast is going to last for eternity.
I'm going to say.
Yeah. Sorry. That was mean.
I'm going to say yes.
Oh,
no.
Oh, that was evil, David. Evil. All right, last question, around 10 for Tara. Yes. Release the hounds.
Release the hounds? No.
It is.
What? Good.
Wow, that's awesome.
All right, round 11. Is this an item from a Fear Factor Gross Food Challenge?
Oh, dear.
Sarah Bunting, live snails.
Live snails? I'm going to say yes.
Correct.
Nice.
Joe, tarantula.
Eating? I know they've had a lot of them where they were crawling on their faces.
Now I'm imagining it.
Yeah. I'm going to say no.
Correct.
Hey!
Survivor did it as a food challenge, not...
Oh, God, that's right.
Fear Factor. God, I knew that. Sheep brains, Linda. Sheep brains. Little head cheese.
Yes.
Correct.
Well done.
Tara Ariano.
Yep.
Sea cucumber. Sea cucumber.
No?
Yes. Shit. Sarah D. Bunting. Get ready for this. It's on your plate. It's horse rectum. Rectum.
Everybody loves
nearly
horse
ate him.
Rectum.
Because I'm on Fear Factor.
Hardly even know him. Yes.
Joe Reed, reindeer testicles. Jingle bells, I bet that.
Every time.
If I had a nickel.
Yeah, sure, yes. There we go.
Linda Holmes, bull spleen.
Bull spleen, I am going to say no.
Yeah, it was.
Man. Sure, of course. It's a trick question.
Tar. Yes. Yeah. Cod sperm.
Cod sperm?
Yeah.
What? Oh, God. It's so specific. I'm going to say yes.
You are
God,
correct.
Fear Factor.
There's only one false in that whole
Go back
round.
To college, Fear Factor.
All right. Round 12.
Learn to type.
Yes. Thank you.
Back to the Amazing Race, guys.
Okay.
Are these the titles of a pair of Amazing Race detour tasks?
Oh, good.
Sarah Bunting, count the money or run the numbers.
No.
That's a real one.
It is a real one. Sandy bottom or fruity top?
Fruity top? Is that what
fruity
you said?
Fruity top.
Sandy
yeah.
bottom or fruity top.
That's okay. My friend you're talking about.
I was going to say, once again, I'm feeling very attacked.
Sorry.
I thought this was a safe space.
Fucking game writer privilege over there.
I'm going to say, it sounds so silly, yes.
You're correct.
There we go.
Nice.
Over the hill or under the sea for Linda?
I will say no.
Correct. It was not. Tara Ariano. Yeah. Light Brigade or Masquerade?
Real.
Correct. Fence or Gate? G-A-I-T.
Uh-huh.
G-A-I-T. I think that's real.
You think wrong.
No!
Sync or swim. Sync, like syncing your phone to your computer.
Oh, jeez. What a dumb-sounding challenge.
While you're thinking about that, I'll tell a little tale of a interactive campaign I did once for a company called Infogrames, which later became Atari. I did the online marketing for a game called NSYNC Phone or something like that, where it was a CD-ROM, but also it was like this plastic phone, and like NSYNC would call you and like would sync up to your computer and like give you like time appropriate messages. Like it would call you in the morning and say good morning and everything. Anyways.
Yeah, but Abadoo, I like talking to you. I'm Joey Fatone.
Joe Reed, sink or swim?
No.
Yes.
Damn it.
Linda Holmes, push or pull?
Yes.
No.
What?
This or
That's
that?
Astonishing. This or that? No.
Yes.
What?
Wow.
That was episode one. They hadn't quite figured out the formula.
All right, that was round 12.
Okay.
Let's hear the scores.
Fuck, it's still very, very close. Linda has 10. Sarah has 13. Joe has 15. I have 16.
Okay, so our winner is not yet determined. It is still open.
Okay.
Round 13. Guys, because we're here in the bullpen reunion, round 13, is this a retired game from The Price is Right?
Nice.
Yay! Retired game.
Retired.
Okay.
Sarah Bunting, Flea Market.
No.
You're correct, it is not. J.R. Mystery Price.
Yes.
You are correct.
Nice.
Linda Holmes, Swap Meat.
Yes.
It is not retired, but it is a game. Trick question, trick question.
God.
Jesus.
Tara Ariano.
Yeah.
Prize fight.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yes, very confidently. Shit.
Yes.
Sarah, the phone home game.
Yes.
Yep. Joe Reed, telephone game.
No.
Yeah, it's a retired game.
Ah.
Linda Holmes, conveyor belt.
Yes.
Sorry.
I'm sitting in the bad chair.
Our Ariano pyramid scheme.
You're going to say no?
Correct. It is not. Sarah D. Bunting, one wrong price.
One wrong price, shit. No.
Correct, it is active. Joke. Shower game.
Oh, no. Jesus,
Bob.
You know what the theme music for shower game is, don't you?
In the butt, Bob.
Don't let your indecision take you from behind.
Oh.
Shower game.
Oh God! It doesn't sound like something you would make up when trying to make up fake Price is Right games.
Or does it?
Yeah,
I'm gonna say it's real.
It is.
Oh my God!
All right, Linda. Here's your last question: give or take?
Give or take? I'm gonna say no.
You are correct. The game is called Give or Keep.
Oh,
that's what I thought.
Yeah.
Tara Ariano, split decision.
No.
It is a retired game. All right, that is 13 rounds.
God.
We got a tie.
We do?
Yep.
All right. Two-way tie?
What?
Two-way tie?
Yeah, me and Joe. So Linda has 11, Sarah has 16, Joe and I have 17.
God, I almost got back in it.
Almost.
Why?
All right.
Space.
I have to do some quick math because of the nature of this question.
Oh my.
Okay.
There were 112 questions in this quiz.
Oh boy.
Discarding our round 8.
Okay.
How many answers were false? closest answer without going over wins.
What was the total number?
112.
How many were false?
How many of those were false?
Joe, you can go first.
Oh.
I'm going to say...
Wait, hold on. I don't want anybody to go first. I want you to guess at the same time. Oh. I know it's going to be a little weird.
Okay.
Auditory, but I think it's an unfair advantage.
All right.
We're playing
okay,
Price
fine.
Is Right rules.
Okay, so 3-2-1, okay. And then
all
we
right.
both go.
Got are your you... numbers?
I have my number.
Got your number, Joe? You locked number. In?
Yep.
Yes. You locked in?
Yep.
Yes.
3-2-1, go.
53.
41.
Joe Reed, 43 is the answer.
Joe.
That was fun.
It was fun.
All right. That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We discuss whether American Crime Story fit like a glove or left a bad taste in our mouth, like when you go to somewhere else that's not Soup Plantation for lunch. Liv filed her latest face-off report before we went around the dial with stops at Jane the Virgin, Rehab Addict, Hollywood Game Night, Drunk History, and food ads of the 1980s. It's a bird, it's a plane, it's Lois and Clark's honeymoon in Metropolis in the Extra Hot Great Canon, thanks to intrepid pop culture commentary Linda Holmes. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Joe was the winner of the season's first game time. Remember?
We're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
Tsunami,
Sarah D. Hunting,
Juice,
Joe Reed,
not in Kimmy's bedroom.
And Linda Holmes.
I accept your pity win.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
When the U.S. swim team needs eardrops, there's no competition. Murine eardrops. Murine, the official eardrops of the U.S. swim team.
Why is this happening to me? Why?
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.